Hi, everybody. Thank you for listening to The Treasure Hunt, my personal attempt to share my musical curiosity with you. My name is Bas Wiegers, and I'm a conductor. I like to speak about treasure hunting to describe what we conductors do, which might sound a bit childlike, but I want to avoid using words like meaning or what music is about or understanding it. I have no idea if we can understand music. I have no idea if we should try to understand it. Some treasures have no meaning, but it can still be fabulous to find them. And music does not always have to be about something. So I'm calling it treasure hunting. Right now, I'm hunting for treasures in a new score by Georg Friedrich Haas, an opera called Sycorax. It premieres in Bern, Switzerland, on September the 17th. I've done quite a few of Haas's pieces in the past, even another opera, so I know more or less what tools he uses, what is important to him, how he uses the orchestra, the voice, etc. It obviously makes my search a little bit easier than with composers whose work I don't know. In Haas's music, I find it striking that I often lose my sense of time. Music is, of course, very much a time art. It only exists now. The basic ingredients are sound and time. And in Haas's music, time is often unclear, somehow not limited. Bar lines are sometimes a bit arbitrary, they could be anywhere. Rhythm feels either improvised or free, or it has a very clear driving force, either forcing time to go on, to move faster, or slower. Sound worlds change, shift. At some point, you realize you are somewhere else without knowing exactly how you got there or when you got there. As a small example, we listen to a few minutes of his piece Limited Approximations. I'm briefly going to speak about technique now. I'll try to make it not too complex, but I need this to get to the treasure. One of the composition tools Haas always works with are different tuning systems. I'm terribly oversimplifying, but he uses roughly three possibilities. First is the traditional Western tuning that we started using towards the end of the Baroque era, basically the black and white keys of a piano. Second, what I would like to call dissonance music, not referring to traditional harmony. This is the stuff my aunts dislike when they come to see my concerts. In the dissonance spectrum, Haas even uses completely non-existing tunings, creating a kind of microtonal blur or cluster that don't have any relation to what the black and white keys of the piano can reproduce. And third, he uses overtone chords and melodies, which for him represent sort of a new balance, a healing harmony, a real true resonance. We'll speak a little bit about these overtone chords. The idea is quite simple, and it's based on straightforward physics. Basically, the principle is you have one lower wavelength that is subdivided into smaller bits. The more subdivided it is, the higher it becomes. Here is a very small excerpt of a piece by Claude Vivier, where a double bass plays a low note and then the harmonics of that low note, basically breaking the lowest wavelength into exact mathematical ratios. Let's hear that again. We hear the low note, then the first harmonic, the second harmonic, the third, and so on. Now, if you play these notes together, which we'll hear later, they form a very harmonious kind of chord, because all those partials were actually already physically present in the basic wavelength. So all those notes resonate very, very well. In the 20th century, many composers started playing with these chords. By the way, some of these ideas were already present in older music and in many forms of traditional music also. For example, in this throat singing from Tibet. Actually, when you listen carefully to your vacuum cleaner or your freezer, you might hear something very similar, a low rumble and familiar tones ringing in a higher register. A very clear 20th century example is the beginning of partiel, which literally means partials, referring to the physics of the technique, by the French composer Gérard Griset. Here you hear the basic low wavelength in the trombone together with the higher partials played by different instruments. I'll probably speak about Griset in another podcast, because I'll be doing his work a couple of times later this year. Now back to this opera and to my treasure hunting. Sycorax is basically a follow-up piece for The Tempest by Shakespeare. We'll hopefully speak more about the libretto in the next episode, but for now, we want to know only that Prospero was the Duke of Milan. Due to a tempest and the resulting shipwreck, he and his daughter Miranda stranded on the island where this opera takes place. He conquered the island and used the island's magical powers for his own benefit. In the opera, he is confronted with the original inhabitants, represented by Sycorax and Caliban, and the island's spirit, Ariel. Prospero loses the magic, his ruling ends, and a healing process begins for Sycorax, Caliban, and Miranda. In the opera, traditional harmony and complete dissonance correspond with the disrupted state under Prospero's reign. The resonating overtone chords represent the magical world of the island and the healed state, and they become more and more apparent towards the end of the piece. So last week, at home at my desk, I started making a list of the different chords that Haas is using in this opera, scribbling down in which scenes these chords appeared. It's a work that conductors also do when preparing a Mozart opera. In classical music, we know that an aria in F major should have a complete different feel to it than an aria in G minor. And realizing what key you're in makes a difference in how you want to present the piece. Let's listen to a couple of bars of some joyful F major. And now, let's have a couple of bars of Deep Sorrow in G minor. So I figured, why not do a similar analysis for Haas and see if the chords mean anything specific in this piece? That work was easier than it sounds because basically he uses only four overtone chords in the entire opera. And again, I'm simplifying here because he often puts chords on top of each other. But if you deconstruct the thing, there are only four basic chords. A chord on A, on C sharp, on G, and on E flat. Now, what I found is that he uses the G and E flat chord more in situations with Sycorax or connected to the magic of the island. The piece also sort of ends on the E flat, clearly representing the original state of the island. Prospero is mainly connected to traditional Western unharmonious chords or dissonance and clusters. But Haas also roughly uses chords on A and C sharp in situations with Prospero. But what struck me the most was that Miranda, Prospero's daughter, is from the beginning of the piece accompanied by all four chords. When I found this, I realized what that meant, namely that from the beginning of the piece, Haas wants us to feel that Miranda is part of both worlds. She's rooted in the world of Prospero, but she's able to connect to the magic of Sycorax and to the island. You just heard a bit of Haas's string quartet number 9, where we heard the harmonious chords very clearly shift in and out, back into harmony, back out of harmony, back into harmony. Now, the treasure hunt at my desk. When I talked to Haas about the chords, he said he didn't consciously connect these chords to Prospero and or Sycorax, but he might have done so intuitively. The fact that Miranda is always connected to the four chords was very important, though. For me personally, all this theory and close reading had an impact on how I looked at the scenes, and it gave me a purpose, a necessity behind those chords. And with a bit of luck, that purpose, that necessity, will transfer to the musicians and to the audience, even though they might not completely be aware of all this theory behind it. But that's the good thing with music. Music can transfer or transmit things without us being aware or without us understanding it completely. Not everyone might be aware that Erbarme dich is in B minor, but it will hit you anyway. In this episode, you heard music by Claude Vivier, Gérard Griset, Georg Friedrich Haas, and again, a bit of Mozart. I'll put the full links in the show notes. Next episode, I hope to bring a guest. There is still more to discover about Sycorax, I think. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Treasure Hunt. Please follow this podcast on your favorite platform and stay tuned for the next episode. Until then, goodbye.